So I'm going to talk about agroforestry buffers for non-point source pollution reduction from exports. But there again. What did he do? What did he do? Thank you very much. So this is to give an idea about nitrogen and phosphorus loss from corn soybean watersheds. This study was conducted for 7 years with three adjacent watersheds. What we see here is phosphorus loss from corn soybean watershed range from 0.29 to 3.59 kilograms during the 7 year study with three watersheds, and the average is about 1.36 kilograms. The main point is about 48% of the loss happened when there is no crop. For nitrogen, 13 to 19 kilograms with a mean of 16 kilograms per hectare per year. About 57% of the loss happened when there is no vegetation. That shows if you have another kind of vegetation, perennial vegetation, or vegetation that grows beyond the cropping period can be used to remove that, reduce that type of losses. So those losses can cause severe damage, significant damages to river water quality, lake water quality, and estuaries. This is a data analysis by US EPA. It shows about 44% of the measured rivers out of 3.5 million miles of river length has been impacted by agricultural water pollution. It could be sediment coming from watersheds or cattle damage. As we see on the right corner, and finally those nutrients can get into the ocean and get into the hypoxia zones. So this is to show the damage happening in other parts of the world, in Europe, the red areas, but another study has shown that the real losses are 3 to 40 times greater than the estimated values, and in the US losses are about 12 times greater than. When you lose topsoil, you lose land productivity. In till soil, about glacial soils about 30%, and windblown loss material about 13% of corn yields. And because of these losses, hypoxia zones have increased all over the world. In 1910, there were less than 10 hypoxia zones. Now there are about 400 hypoxia zones all over the world in 100 years. That is 400% increase of hypoxia zones caused by agricultural water pollution and nutrient sediment taking to the ocean. So we have conducted a long-term study at in Missouri at two research centers belong to the University of Missouri. One is at northeast corner of Missouri, clay pan soils. Leftmost figure shows three adjacent watersheds. The left one has grass buffers, middle one has trees within the grass buffers, and the right watershed is the control watershed. That is a paired watershed design, because in watershed studies you cannot have so many replications. So we used a paired watershed approach for the corn soybean management, and the right one is, as Niranga explains, that's the same study site at Horticulture Agroforestry Research Center, with two watersheds having poplar buffers and two with grass buffers, and the other two watershed cattle goes to every place. So there is no buffer system. All of these watersheds are instrumented with flumes, water samplers, and 4 meters. To give an idea about the corn soybean watershed, west center east, 91 to 97 was the calibration period. Calibration means we have collected water samples at the exit point. So you can develop relationships between watersheds. Like, say, if one watershed is generating 100 cubic meters of runoff per hectare, how much is coming out of the next watershed? So those relationships can be used later on to understand treatment effects. So when you have a good relationship, what it means is if you keep one of the watershed without buffers, the next figure, as you see, the control watershed doesn't have any buffers. The middle watershed, the wide lines represent tree grass buffers, and the contour strip watershed, the left one, has only grass buffers. So we have a control watershed. We know if X amount of runoff, nitrogen, sediment per hectare is coming out of control watershed, what is coming out of the other two watershed if there is no buffer, right? Because we had developed the relationship earlier during that 7-year calibration period. Then if there is a difference from that number, that can be attributed to treatments. So we have a good regression relationship with 97% R squared for sediment, nitrogen, phosphorus, and runoff. So now we can see what's happening in the watershed. Just to give an idea, trees were planted in 1997. Now they are about 6-7 meters tall in the middle watershed. So as you see here on the graph figure, 1997, due to disturbance, there was much more losses in runoff, sediment, nitrogen compared to the control watershed. With time, it has decreased. That's how you look at paired watershed results. So now the difference is between the control and the treatment watershed is about 45% in runoff. When you average all those across the two management types, sediment reduction by buffers is about 39%, as you see on with the red letters. Total nitrogen is about 43%, phosphorus is about 48% compared to respective controls. What I meant by respective controls is in the paired watershed study, the control watershed, in the grazing study, it's replicated. Replication. So these watersheds also help store more water during the recharge period. That way, runoff volume can be reduced. Just to give an idea, for 2004, 944 millimeters of rainfall, 670 was during the cropping period. We have installed soil moisture sensors in crop areas. Those two white areas with red dots show the crop area sensors 10 meters from the buffer edge, and in the buffer areas within grass buffers and agroforestry buffers. So we looked at soil moisture recharge during the October after the crops were harvested. 166 millimeters of rain during that time. What this figure shows is during that October 6th rain event, soil water content has gone up on both management systems, but still corn areas had higher moisture content. During the second rain event that happened on October 11th, October 12th, soil moisture contents were higher in the agroforestry area, tree areas, compared to the crop areas. So that continued in the third rain event also. This is for the 5 cm at the top, and the second one is for the 10 cm. And 20 cm also, we have observed better water storage in the agroforestry, 40 cm also. So once we have all the data, we looked at what is the future of this type of management. So we used APEX model because APEX can be used to separate small sections into small sub-areas, because we have topography, soil management means yield data, measured runoff data and precipitation. So these are the 2-3 watersheds. Each area was separately simulated, like buffers by soil type and land management. We looked at 6 different scenarios. The existing buffer condition, 20% of the area under buffers, 10% back, 10% toe slope, and 10% different shapes. During the calibration and validation, we have found very good relationships between measured and simulated values. Just to give an idea, R square was satisfied. NSC was good, P bias was less than about 20%. So this shows the effect of these management types. The bar graph at the top shows the left one is without buffers, and the third one is the most efficient management system, flat area at the end of the watershed and upland buffer. That has reduced runoff by 21% on agroforestry watershed, 11% on the grass buffer, sediment 77 and 76, phosphorus 23 and 19. This is the 30-year simulation. So I found 2 review papers. One of them shows the sediment reduction by different types of buffers, nitrogen reduction by different types of buffers. As you see here, to reduce sediment, nitrogen, you need much wider buffers. So Riparian buffers are types of agroforestry buffers. So as you see here on the fourth bar, it needs about 100 feet wide or 300 meter wide buffer to reduce soluble nutrients. But bank stability less than 10 meters should be enough, according to this figure. This is from National Academy of Science 2002. Recommendation was restoration of riparian functions along America's water bodies should be a national goal. This is a riparian buffer coming from University of Iowa, Iowa State University. It consists of four different management systems: trees next to the stream, then shrubs and native grasses. Within the tree group, we have two different types of trees: fast-growing trees along the stream and slow-growing trees between the fast-growing and shrubs. Why these systems are more effective? Because they have store more carbon, and this is coming from USDA. We looked at soil health parameters. The first one shows the X-ray CT images collected at 10 micrometer resolution. And the bar graph with colors, gray, shows enzyme aggregate stability. As you see here, crop areas has the lowest aggregate stability. And with the permanent vegetation, we have much better improved soil parameters and aggregate stability. And enzyme activities were much higher. And because of all these features, these buffers can bond antibiotics very strongly to soil types. So gray bars represent soils coming from agroforestry areas. As you see here, three different soil types were investigated: Armstrong, Huntington, and Menfro. Menfro is coming from the central part of the Missouri. Armstrong is from the northeast. Huntington is from south southwest corner. As you see here, with all three soil types, agroforestry had better absorption of antibiotics compared to crop area. And because of better antibiotic absorption capabilities, we looked at what is the effect of vegetation. Much combination of different types of vegetation were more effective compared to single species. For reduction of sulfamethoxazine, tylosine, and enrofloxacin losses in agricultural runoff. This figure shows the effect of different vegetations. As you see here, with poplar, within 100 hours, antibiotic concentration was reduced compared to the control and switchgrass. And that's true with herbicides also. The top line is for control, and when you have multiple types of vegetation, those are much more effective in controlling herbicides getting into the water bodies. Thank you very much for listening. If you have any questions, I try to answer.